Right, let's move to Christchurch 7 years later. Two young kids, Beatrice and Annie Coombs, are out gathering fruit in an empty garden one evening, and they find a baby's head amongst the bushes and some rope and a shawl, both covered in blood. These two kids, I'm not sure how old they are, 10, 12 or something, continue to play around this area, which is pretty yucky, really. 4 hours later, they go home and they tell their mother what they found, who doesn't actually believe them, of course, goes down there, can't find anything, but does inform the police. So the police go down, get their lanterns going, and they can only find the shawl. And they think, look, this is just, you know, a hoax on these mothers by these kids. But the next day, they go back again, and they do find a baby's head amongst the bushes. It had been dragged around by some dogs and cats. It was not in particularly good condition. And this all gets reported in the papers, so it's sort of one instalment after another, and you start to get the people of Christchurch, the good folk of Christchurch, getting very excited and interested in this, and their interest goes even higher when a local cop, Daniel Flanagan, is arrested, and his wife, Anna, who works for the police as a searcher, and their 32-year-old daughter, Sarah, the mother of the dead child, then gets arrested in Wellington here, where she's just calling on her way to Sydney, where she's travelling under an assumed name on a very hurried passage across the Tasman. Now, this family was very well known around Christchurch and Littleton. Sarah's brother was a respectable hotel keeper, landlord of the Mitre Hotel. Sarah worked as a housekeeper for him, but most of her time she was working as a music teacher, a teacher of piano. And respectability, again, was really important for this family. And they were pretty dismayed when their daughter Sarah was pregnant again. Second unwed pregnancy in 2 years caused great consternation for the family. And they took huge pains to conceal these pregnancies from all their neighbours. When Sarah's second child was born, there was a male doctor in attendance. And they said, you know, you come into the house, you have to leave by the back door, leave by the back door at night, no one is to see you leaving these premises. They decide that the family can't keep the child and they will put him out to nurse with a young nurse called Jane Freeman. And Jane has to leave the family home by the back door at night as well, and no one is allowed to see what's going on. And she is sworn under oath not to reveal the identity of the child's mother. And Sarah Flanagan's introduced to her as Mrs. Stevens, whose husband is away gold mining on the West Coast. So the family's going to great pains to hide all of this. Even so, Sarah, the mother of the baby, and Anna, her mum, go along and visit the child periodically. So one night, they decide to take the baby away, and they say that Sarah has decided to join this mythical husband on the West Coast, and they're going to take the baby with them. So after leaving the house, Sarah said she left her mother to say goodbye to a friend who lived nearby, and walking down the street, Sarah gets accosted by two men who ask her where she's going, and she says to the police, "I said, for God's sake, let me pass these two blokes who oppose her. One of the men took the baby out of my arms, the other tied a rope round my wrists and pulled me along until I fell exhausted. Another man came up and both the others ran away. The man who took the baby was a short, stout, fair man, just like the father of the baby. The other man who tied my hands was a tall, dark man." So nothing really much for the police to go on. And driven to sort of extremes by the horror of it all, Sarah's parents, they said, arranged for her to get to Sydney out of all harm's way, you know, out of all trouble, and they would deal with it. The police don't believe this either, obviously, and the women end up in court. And in court, they fall into hysterics very, very quickly. They're constantly interrupting the police and constantly interrupting the lawyers, and very often they get escorted out of the court crying and shrieking. They're hysterical, they faint. During the very graphic descriptions the police did of finding the baby's body and the baby's head, and Sarah herself is constantly shouting out in court, protesting her own innocence, her mother's innocence, even her father's innocence, despite the fact that all charges against him have been dropped. And then when the verdict is passed, they're screaming hysterically and they're sort of carried out of court, kicking and shouting and biting and scratching the whole way. So again, respectable Christchurch turning out in their droves to watch this get a huge performance, and the crowd loves every minute of it. And they're real sensations for the crowds who fill the courtroom. So if you think about this, 1890s, there's no TV, there's no radio. If you think about newspapers at the time, there's very few images in them, just constant text and reporting. But each saga in this case was reported in full in the papers, and people read it, and it was the subject of endless gossip around Christchurch. And every little bit gets reported: discovering of the body, the body parts, the arrest of the woman, the coroner's inquest, the magistrate's court trial, and then the Supreme Court trial with wigged and robed judges. And they heard stories of wronged women and wicked men, and they listened to details of, you know, your neighbour's life when it goes wrong. They watched the woman remain very calm or swooning hysterically, and they enjoyed that soaring eloquence of very learned counsel. And they looked on as the judge put the black cap on and sentenced both women to death. And Christchurch put on a real elaborate show here. It's a scene of Christchurch, which is not a particularly attractive looking place then. And here's the Supreme Court building where all of this went on. The first time these women appear in the courts, a huge crowd gathers to watch, and they watch the prisoners come in, and they have to sneak around the back door because there's so many people there, and there's a rush on the court. And newspapers reported crowds in the court fighting and scratching and scuffling with each other, trying to get a decent seat here, and people are jammed in together, shouting and carrying on. The judge has to really call for order. And even when Sarah gets caught here in Wellington and taken back on the steamer to Christchurch, somehow everyone finds out when she's arriving. 900 people turn up on the wharf in Lyttelton to watch her arrive and to be taken back to Christchurch. And they're not actually sure which is Sarah when these women are disembarking from the steamer. So every time a woman comes down the gangplank, crowd rushes on her, sort of badgering and shouting and carrying on. So it must have been sort of a pretty scary thing for the women involved. And I think that questions of justice are really about the last thing on people's mind when they come to something like that. The whole show, the whole spectacle, the whole sort of watching people go through a pretty horrendous experience is right up there. So these two cases, Phoebe Veitch and Anna and Sarah Flanagan, are two of the, despite the way I've talked about it, unnotable and unknown, quite forgotten murder cases in New Zealand's criminal history. But in some ways, both of these cases are quite momentous because very, very few women were sentenced to death, and very, very few women in court for murder and child murder, which was commonly called infanticide at the time, or concealment of birth. And you would have heard of Minnie Dean, the Winton baby farmer, only woman in New Zealand sentenced to death. The biographer of Minnie Dean, Lindley Hood, has said that women killed their children all the time in 19th century New Zealand, which is just patently untrue. In the years bracketed by these two cases, fewer than 20 women appeared in court connected with the murder of their children or concealment of birth or infanticide. So it's not a common thing whatsoever. But something like child murder and infanticide was a really dramatic but not common solution to the problems of unwanted children or single motherhood. And as I said, very few women sentenced standing trial for murder, even fewer sentenced to death. So stories of someone like Minnie Dean, the only woman executed in New Zealand, really overshadow other cases like these two that I've talked about today, who were also condemned to death but were given a reprieve at the last minute.